Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, from the Milwaukee Bucks coaching staff, Darvin Ham and Josh Longstaff. From Stanford University, Hall of Fame coach, Tara Vanderveer. And program director for the California Storm and director of basketball of the Sports Academy, George Quintero. And now, here's your host, Jay Billis.
We'd like to welcome you into the latest edition of Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Today, we're going to talk about teaching offensive concepts, and we've got just four brilliant basketball minds to tell us about that. We'll dive straight into it, but first, I want to introduce the panelists we have joining us today. We've got Darvin Ham, an assistant coach with the Milwaukee Bucks, Josh Longstaff, also an assistant coach with the Milwaukee Bucks, George Quintero, the program director of both the California Storm and the Sports Academy. And later on, we'll be joined by Basketball Hall of Famer Tara Vanderveer, the head coach at Stanford. But before we jump in, I want to tell you a little bit about each one of the folks we've got joining us today. And they really don't need an introduction, but I'm going to give them one anyway. Darvin's got in his contract that he has to have a flowery introduction. But Darvin Ham, who played at Texas Tech, and everybody remembers, I think, the Sports Illustrated cover where he shattered a backboard in 1996. He's also the slam dunk contest champion coming out of college, an eight-year NBA veteran that played with Denver, Indiana, Washington, Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Detroit. He's been an assistant with the Lakers, with the Hawks, and now with the Milwaukee Bucks, and we're really excited to have Darvin join us. And one of his colleagues with the Milwaukee Bucks, Josh Longstaff, who played at Bryant University. He was a four-year letterman for Bryant, and then he got a job with the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2010. Started out as a video coordinator working in the front office and was an assistant coach on the bench with the New York Knicks and the head coach of a G League team, the Atlanta affiliate, the Bayhawks, and now an assistant coach with the Milwaukee Bucks. And we're very happy to have Josh with us. And last but certainly not least, George Quintero, who was an outstanding player at Santa Monica High School back in the old Bay League, where he had some battles with Rolling Hills High School, which is a powerhouse in Southern California, at least it was back in the day. It's called Peninsula High School now. And in case you don't know, that's where I went to school. But he's been one of the truly elite junior coaches in America for the last 35 years. Was with the California Storm, also now with the Sports Academy. And we're really excited to have all of you here to talk about teaching offensive concepts. And want to start with you, George. When you're working with young players, what are you trying to teach first? What do you want each young player to have in order to be a complete offensive player?
I think one of the things first is identifying, you know, the type of movement that the athlete has initially, the way they move. But I always start with footwork. To me, footwork creates every opportunity for fluidity. It's important to start from your feet, then get to your base, how wide your base is, allows you to be more explosive, to really understand how to use your feet. And then we just build all the way up where your hands and your body are very low, where you can connect your hands as close to the floor as possible, so that when you go shoulder to hip on an attack dribble, your body's just consistently low, which allows you to explode to a high level, to a very nice release point. So I really believe the foundation is your feet and being able to be comfortable with footwork, most important.
Well, that's a great point, especially about getting low. It seems like the players whose shoulders are lower is the one that wins most interactions. Darvin, when you get a player that gets toward the NBA level, what's the thing that you have to work with most generally in order to improve that player that they may be not deficient, but they may be lacking in?
Just teaching them how to be more efficient with their body movements. Coach just mentioned it, you know, the footwork and playing. I played for Larry Brown on three different occasions, and he would always say, you know, I coach from the floor up, and that's specifically the coach's point. Like, you have to get their feet together. You have to teach them how to simplify. You know, a lot of these guys now in this new era, they come in thinking, you know, I don't have the ball in my hands and I can't take 18 dribbles. Then how am I going to get a shot off? So you have to teach them body positioning as the ball is on its way to arrive in their hands. You also have to teach them how to be quick, already in a position, body low, ready to go, chest up, head and eyes up. So when they catch the ball, they can shoot it, they can swing it, or they can drive it. Just on a 0.5 second type of scale. So just teaching them how to simplify their games, teaching them how to be more efficient with their energy, with their movements, and not to waste energy, waste actions, waste dribbles. So teaching them how to be more efficient.
You know, speaking of that, Josh, at the levels that you've coached at, especially when you're coaching in the G League, what was it that you wanted players to do as far as making quick decisions? And how did you work on making quicker decisions and better decisions?
Yeah, I think it was a big part of who we were. You know, having Atlanta as our affiliate and Coach Bud as the leader of that team, it was part of the fabric of who they were. So I think mirroring the way that they play and, you know, a lot of things that we did was we would show film of the way Atlanta was playing throughout the year so that, you know, we could implement those type of quick decision concepts that they were using. And then, you know, in each player's individual work with the assistant coaches, work a lot on making quick decisions on the benefit of what that does for you. You know, keeping the defense on their heels at all times, moving it to the next action, to the next play, creating action as a player. And then, you know, you tie those things into the team concepts, into games, and you try to hold the players accountable and show them the benefits of it in team film after. But it was definitely a huge concept that we tried to teach our guys.
Josh, could you expand a little bit about what you mean by creating action as a player?
Yeah, so, you know, I think as a player, you know, when you catch the ball, kind of like Darvin and both George mentioned, being ready to do something, whether it's shoot, pass, drive it. A lot of times, you know, we like to play with our bigs on the perimeter. So when the bigs catch it and they can't shoot it, they may not feel as comfortable, you know, driving the ball all the way to the basket. So, you know, moving it on and chasing it with a pick and roll, creating another action, moving it into a quick DHO with another player is creating action. And I think the more actions you can create in the half court and the quicker you can do those, I think it's harder for the defense to stay loaded up and to guard you.
Darvin, to that point, how much as an offensive player, how much do you want your players to have in mind what they're going to do before they catch the ball and that may be taken away from them. They've got to make a read and go to another option, but how much is determined before you catch it?
A ton. I mean, you see how different defenses are guarding you, you know, obviously based on the individual player's skill set, it determines how the defense defends you. So what we do in our practices, our individual workouts, we teach our guys how to play, be total basketball players, like Josh mentioned, a dribble handoff. If you don't have a shot, you go create another action with your teammate. And that opens up because now, you know, all the time as coaches, we want everything to be perfect, right? And we all know that once the game starts, you're going to have – you know, different circumstances, there are miscellaneous circumstances, certain things you didn't plan for or whatever. Teams have scouted you well, so they're all on top of what your so-called sets may be. So we have to teach our guys how to, again, do dribble handoffs, pitch and hits, like Josh mentioned, making a quick swing, going to set a screen behind it. So teaching your guys how to be not just individual skill players, but getting them in two-man, three-man, four-man, five-man group workouts, and just teaching them how to play basketball, teaching them how to develop second side actions on their own. So when they find themselves in that predicament during the game, you know, it's just second nature for them to go play with their teammate, create an action, which creates an opening either for the guy that's handling the ball, the guy that's setting the screen, or the guy that's standing behind the play who his guy has to help off. Now he's open for a shot. So you do these things in your individual and your team and your group workouts, whether it's player development sessions, whether it's pre-practice, during practice. We do, I think our staff and Bud has done a great job of setting that tone with our staff, and the way he wants the game to be taught is for them to not have to think too much. They can be second nature in their actions. And again, just reading and reacting and just being ready to address whatever unexpected defense may be thrown your way.
You know, George, you see all the best players in California and you see them from a young age on until they go on to college. And one of the biggest complaints I hear, to the point that both Darvin and Josh have made about, you know, the majority of the game, you're not going to have the ball in your hands. And what are you doing without the ball? The complaints I hear from most coaches are that in today's game, so many players are working with skill coaches in one-on-0 situations. Not that that's a bad thing, but they're doing the majority of their work with the ball in their hands instead of playing without the ball. How do you best teach a player to play without the ball, to move without the ball, and to, as Josh put it, create without having the ball in your hands?
Yeah, Jay, that's such a great point. Part of me being in a facility where there's so many trainers. So we're going to see kids that are 5 years old, and we'll see LeBron James, well, whoever it is, the level. But one thing that I'm really big on, I've said this before, cones don't move, right? And watching Bruce Lee when Enter the Dragon, boards don't hit back, right? And so reality, the way I teach this game is I use imaginary players. I remove all tools. Today, for example, I didn't use a ladder drill. I taught them the importance of being able to go 1-2 step on your footwork, right? Opposed to applying it to a cone, but have a ball in your hand. So honestly, like the biggest thing is that we have to develop a clear understanding of the importance, like you said, without the ball. But what I'm doing now is making sure that kids are using footwork to move and have constant action, constantly moving, multiple efforts. So set a pick and pop, catch and shoot, but then maybe you don't have that shot. Go off the dribble and ask for a dribble handoff and then hand that ball off and then pop open again and try to be efficient as Klay Thompson did, right? With, you know, efficiency. And so for me, my generation and Jay, I know we were in the same generation. We were very efficient. So the biggest move you're going to make is through the leg cross and a pull up. And Coach Darwin said the same thing. If you have to be super efficient when you have multiple defenders, you have a deny on both sides if you're at the point. You got post presence. You've got to be able to get in between those seams. Pretty darn efficient. And then you have to maximize kind of movement and finding gaps. So for me, I really try to teach the importance of an imaginary player and players on the court at all times. And you guys touched on visual. I think the most important thing is having great vision. Vision is everything. So before you get a ball, you should understand your vision, where the lanes are going to open up before you get a ball, so that instead of getting a ball and putting it down on the floor, no, recognize the defense behind the player that's guarding you. So then when you get it, maybe you could rip through and you get to that spot with a great dribble pull up or a slash. And so it's important for me that I teach kids to be so efficient, move without the ball, but then be great off the dribble, but be efficient and not pat it down 15 times. It's not necessary. So
that's a great point. And to the vision point, Josh, in addition to vision on the court, how much do you use in a player's development, use in film with the player individually to help them improve so they can take it to the court in practice and in their player development work?
Yeah, it's a huge part. I think, you know, depending on the player, you know, every player is different, the way that they learn and how much they need without overloading them. But I think, you know, here in Milwaukee, we do a good job when we show film to individual players. We might break it down to 1, 2, maybe 3 specific things that we want that player to make sure that they walk away from the film session with us, knowing what they just improved upon. And I think with the film, you know, first, you know, the truth is right there in front of you. We like to call the computer the truth box because, you know, it's right there. There's no lies to it. It's easy to hold the player accountable and for them to hold themselves accountable. You know, when you freeze it and you see a picture on the screen, and you ask the player questions and see what they see. But I think it's one of the most important things, when it comes to the development of a player, veteran player, you know, how you show that film and how they take it away, I think is really important.
Josh, do you have to teach players how to watch film, especially young players, what to focus upon? I know when I first started watching film, I watched myself the whole time, probably missed the broader point.
Yeah, you're not the only one, I don't think. That's why, you know, I think players like watching film of themselves, but I think that if you can teach them and get them to understand that you're trying to help them take their skills and how can they fit it in, you know, for the best of the team. And I think once players become pros and as they mature, they understand that, like, at the end of the day, it's all about winning. Everyone wants to win. Everybody wants to be a part of something that is bigger than them themselves. And I think that, you know, when you're watching film, you're teaching a player, hey, you know, you can do this because it's the best thing to do out of this certain concept. And, you know, you may show a guard something different than you'll show a big. Depends on their skill set, and it depends on the concept that you're looking at.
You know, Darvin, players that can make reads and that can react instinctively are often the quickest players and the best players. How, as a coach, have you learned to teach players to make reads and to react to what they see? I mean, it's a lot easier said than it is done.
I mean, we assimilate that through, like Josh mentioned, our individual film sessions, our team film sessions. We have a huge support staff in our video room, guys who've decided to try their hand at coaching, and, you know, that are able to play, that played in college, that are working in our video room. So there'll be like a mock defense, and we'll put pennants on them and tell them to guard our players different type of ways. So, you know, we have breakdown drills where the object of the drill is not so much getting a shot. It may be making a certain pass. It may be setting a certain screen. And as George mentioned, you know, a lot of times players get caught up from an offensive standpoint and focusing on the guy that's right in front of them. But you got to see where the help is coming from. You got to see who the guy is helping off of, how to make certain passes, how to make drive a certain angle to open up a passing lane, to open up an open shot. So we just, it's a multitude of things. It's film work and as a team, it's film work as individual players. It's taking that film to the practice court, taking what you did on the practice court to the shoot around, taking what you took from the shoot around to the game. So it's a step-by-step process in trying to work with them to improve their capabilities to read certain defenses and offenses as well.
Yeah, it seems like every coach I've talked to has said, hey, they either say I'm a borrower or I'm a thief. I steal from other coaches or borrow from other coaches. In the NBA, Darvin, who are some of the coaches that you've borrowed from and taken notes from and have helped you the most?
We got one right here on this call. This is Josh Longstaff, man. I steal from him all the time.
Hey, you know, we got to be careful, Jay. It's the right stuff. He's stealing from me. These players are in trouble.
I make sure I obey the copyright laws, though. I give him his credit. But, no, it's been several, man. You know, I played for George Karl. I played for Larry Brown, Terry Stotts. Played for some really talented coaches, Bernie Bickerstaff. And also gotten to work with many, Kenny Atkinson, Quinn Snyder, Taylor Jenkins, a lot of guys throughout the field, Handy, Steve Clifford, a lot of guys, just different ways to guard closeouts, different ways to open, again, to initiate an action just right off of a whim. Basically, just what you're set up to do within the play is not there. So, again, that drilling and learning from these coaches, going to Coach Gerd's camp, he has a camp every August in Vegas where all of these coaches and players will show up. And in the morning, we'll do two-a-days. But in the morning session, it's just a bunch of teaching. And Josh has participated in that as well. So just learning from these guys. And it's we're all borrowing from one another. I mean, it's you're not going to reinvent the wheel. You just want your rims to be a little more shinier than the next guy.
Well, I remember speaking at a clinic that you were at. You gave a brilliant presentation on pick and roll. I've got 8 pages of notes from that. And Josh, who are some of the influences that have shaped your view of the game and how you coach and teach it?
Well, I think, you know, not just because, you know, I work for Coach Bud, but having been the G League head coach for his program, I think I spent a lot of time with him and his, you know, Darvin and the rest of the staff, learning that system and then teaching that. But, you know, there's a lot of people around the league. You know, I've gotten to spend some time with Brad Stevens and Rick Carlisle and kind of study the way they do things. And then at the same time, you know, other front office people as well, Sam Presti, RC Buford, because I think it's good to have an understanding of the way that, you know, the front office looks at things. They want to learn from us. We want to learn from them. But, you know, I think, you know, guys like Coach Bud, he's had such a big impact on myself. And obviously I know on Darvin and he's such a basketball purist. You know, it's the things that we've talked about already, teaching players how to play from the day that they get here, play the right way, move the ball, move the defense, you know, give up a good shot for a great shot, and those type of things.
Well, George, you and I are the oldest horses in this barn. Who are some of your influences that have shaped the way you view the game?
You know, I really did learn the game by listening to Billy Packard and Al McGuire. I have to give them all the credit. Just listening to them when I was younger, the way they described the game, I really felt that that was like the first moment that I really understood that there was an intelligence factor to just, instead of playing pickup basketball, you know, being in the playground, then all of a sudden you go and watch and listen to this, you know, the breakdown. It was fascinating. And honestly, that was important for me. And after that, I was a real big Dean Smith kind of guy. And I really liked my CYO coaches back in Jersey City had me run the four corners like Phil Ford. And I really just knew the Carolina system, because I love Duke, so don't be upset. And so I really just respect that the game was kind of presented to me in a different way. And it was by those gentlemen, you know, that were there before us.
Well, Dean Smith wrote what I still consider to be the best book I've ever read on basketball, called Multiple Offense and Defense. And just a fantastic book if you haven't read it, and our viewers haven't read it. Before I let you guys go, I wanted to ask a specific question about spacing. I've been to your facility, your practice facility in Milwaukee, and it was enlightening for me how, you know, even your markings on the floor, I would call it extreme spacing. And now look, you've got big at Brook Lopez, you got big guys that can really shoot it. But I mean, I was stunned at how extreme your spacing is. Josh, we'll start with you, and then Darvin, can you talk a little bit about the spacing concept and what you feel it brings to your team? Because I think it's brought a lot to the NBA, not just to your team.
Yeah, you know, I think, you've seen our court and the markings on the floor. And I think when you first, you know, when we first took over here in Milwaukee, you look at our best player, Giannis, and what he's great at. And he's great with space and getting to the rim. He's probably maybe the best player in the NBA at doing that. Also, Eric Bledsoe. And you have these guys that, if you give them space, they can do so many unbelievable things. So I think we looked at first, like, the first layer of it is, how do you teach your team to run? And I think the way that we run with five out spacing, two corners, the wings, and a trailer gives our players the best chance to be successful. And it puts our best players in position to play at their highest level.
Darvin, can you give us an example of just how far out you space the floor and where those markings are in practice?
Yes. A big part of formulating a system is understanding what your roster is made of and who your best players are, and trying to play to their strength and try to formulate something that enhances them and can take them to the next level. Josh mentioned Giannis and Bledsoe. Those guys in the open court are like phenomenal and damn near unstoppable. So we wanted to build a roster of shooters around them, guys that are capable of making a three, but also making a basketball plays. And again, Josh mentioned it. I think every time we get a chance to get together as a group, we're constantly preaching our running habits, whether it's one guy pushing the ball, another guy ahead of him. If we got three guys on the same side, that first guy that's in the line, he's running, going all the way through to the opposite corner. And those boxes are named. Like, we have an attack guy with the ball that most likely is coming on the wing box. That guy that's ahead of him in the corner, that's the strong corner. We have a trail. We have an opposite wing. And then we have a weak side corner. So these guys they know where they're supposed to be at any given time on the floor. And again, we try to build our roster out with multifaceted players, shooters, ball handlers, playmakers, guys can make plays, setting the screen rolling. They don't get it. They know where to space out to a certain box area on the floor. So that's something that, you know, they're not robots. So it's something that we have to constantly work at, show film on, but it's proven to work. And then again, with guys like Giannis and Bledsoe, Dante DiVincenzo, guys that can really drive the ball and get to the rim, you know, that spacing is key. And again, your big guys, you know, a lot of times big guys find themselves around the elbows. They may be in the middle of the paint asking for the ball. But again, through constant repetition and constant film work, our guys know where to be on the floor, whether it's corner three, opposite wing, strong corner three, wherever. But they're comfortable being there because we encourage them to shoot those shots. In our system, we have a saying that let it fly. And that takes away any hesitation for them to not want to take a shot because they're uncomfortable on the space that they're standing on the floor. So we constantly work at that with individual work and teamwork, but our running habits and our guys, working on our guys' skill set to be effective from those areas, those boxes that are marked on our floor.
You know, I keep using the term extreme spacing, but my guess is, well, it's not a guess. I mean, that would have been unheard of 10, 15 years ago, what you guys are doing now. How different, Darvin, is the NBA today versus the NBA you played in?
It's extremely different. I think back when I came in the league in 96, and Michael was still playing at a high, high level, winning championships. You had your Charles Barkley's, your Karl Malone's, your Patrick Ewing's, David Robinson's, Hakeem. So it was a more post-up oriented style of play, a more isolation style of play. But once the rules change and in an attempt for the NBA to make the game more, you know, appealing to the eyes, more cosmetically better, and not all the rough rumble and tumble, you know, elbows, hand checks, forearms to the body while the guy's trying to handle the ball, they put in a rule, freedom of movement. So now you can't get into people. So now the game is about speed and spacing. So that's where the game is transferring. The three-point shot has become such a dominant force within our game. So now if you can shoot the ball, if you're a big guy, you can shoot the ball. You have good running habits. You're able to run. You don't have to worry about going to the paint to get beat up, because a lot of it, what's happening now is guys getting downhill, finishing at the rim. And, I mean, I worked for Mike D'Antoni, and, you know, our things were layups, threes, and free throws. So now the free throw line is actually almost replaced the post-up game. So getting to the line, putting another team in the penalty, and you trying to stay in the bonus for the majority of the game to keep the defense on their heels, I mean, I think that's where the game has changed. And the referees are calling the game different. Back in the day, you know, you can hit a guy, you could body check guys running off screens. You can't do any of that anymore. So now the game is all about speed and quickness and freedom of movement. So you have to adjust.
George, how has that changed the evolution of the game? How has that changed the way you teach now as opposed to the way you taught 10, 15 years ago?
You know, from day one, I've always taught about being a versatile player. So from day one, I've always been positionless. And so for me, not much has changed in terms of developing players. So my bigs have always been able to be extremely talented on the blocks, but also I've encouraged them and motivated to come in the gym and step away, shoot the three, go off the dribble and slash. And for that, kids will come back to me. They want to be special. They want to be versatile. So my point guards, they can post you up. They'll crush you on the blocks. And so the exciting part about the way I teach is that when the kids come in the gym, they know they're going to learn every aspect of the game. And for that, now that it's evolved and it's five out, any one of my kids can play anywhere. There's no limit in what they can do. And for me, like you guys have mentioned, spacing is so important. But spacing is one thing. With youth sports, it's people getting in the way because they want the ball. So they're standing there asking for it, right? So what you do is you teach the player the importance of, you know, obviously the timing of that kid getting out of the way. So if you teach them to move properly and believe that they have a purpose when they go set a down screen, that they're going to flare to the corner, then you teach that ball handler, when Joey starts to set a down screen and goes to the corner, you attack and go to the rim. And at that point, if the help kicks, then you kick it out. And so you kind of manipulate their minds a little bit to believe that spacing is important, but don't attack until there's room for you. And so I really haven't seen much change, except the 3-point line is just, these kids walk in the gym and they can shoot a three. When they walk in, I can't even reach from there. There's no way I can reach from the NBA three. And so it's pretty fascinating to see the strength in these kids. But I think timing is so important when you talk about spacing. It's so important. The timing of the attack, the timing of the clear out so the player can attack, the timing of the draw and kick, the timing of the relocation, the timing of elevation, so important that the relationship is a partnership so that, you know, you can get from two man to three to four to five, but it's a relationship that everyone must be on with eye contact and movements.
Well, one thing that has changed dramatically over the years is the resources that coaches have available in order to hone their skills and improve their craft. And Darvin, I know one of the resources that you value is eCoach. And I'm a subscriber. I get the emails every day on all these different drills and concepts and techniques. And you chose a video from Mike Budenholzer about side pick and roll and getting shots for the roller out of that. Can you talk a little bit about E-Coach and specifically what Mike was teaching in that one video?
I think it's a valuable tool. Like we all learn and extract different ideas from one another to, again, improve the game and improve ourselves as coaches. So to have that resource is invaluable. What Bud was teaching specifically on that play is just, again, getting out high and wide as a ball handler and knowing how to set a correct angle. A lot of times, you know, guys would just come and set a screen on a guy's high shoulder as opposed to getting his chest all the way square to the sideline. And then now you force a situation for the defense where if they try to go over the screen, they're going to be behind that ball handler. If they're trying to go under, there's going to be so much distance where that guy has, again, freedom of space where he can shoot it, he can move it to the second side, or he can look for that roller. So it's a great tool in understanding the pick and roll. But, you know, what we do a lot is not just for the two initial guys in that screen in action. A lot of what we do is a guy coming off that side pick and roll and kicking it ahead to the second side for a shot or a second side action, or hitting that roller. And if he's not shooting the ball, he's becoming a playmaker. We work with our bigs a lot. We have this drill, what we call the half roll drill, where we'll come set a screen. We'll have our video room coaches guarding our players, and they have to hit that guy in that little pocket pass. Now our bigs or even our smalls, you know, George mentioned a big part of our system is being able to play positionless basketball. So you'll see our bigs handling and pick and roll. Obviously, Giannis 7 feet tall. We have our small setting a lot of pick and roll screens for him. And again, whether it's our small or our big, once we hit them in that pocket pass, they become playmakers. Now we're teaching them how to read defense. That guy's not helping off the corner, then you try to open up some space and make a quick move to score. If that defense is there, now you know that read is right there in the corner or on the wing. So we drill that a lot. But things like E-Coach, I would suggest and really harp on every coach to log on, subscribe, because you pick up little tidbits, and we have to be careful. We see the Steph Currys, we see the LeBron Jameses of the world, but the simplicity of the way the game is taught, once you master the simple fundamentals, it can keep you on the basketball floor as a player and keep you employed as a coach.
That's true. And, you know, listen, basketball is a game of angles, so I'm going to finish with a little bit of a different angle. So during COVID-19, I have been home more, and I have found that I'm in my refrigerator more than I've ever been. So I'm going to ask each one of you, give me one thing that you've been eating during quarantine that you weren't eating before. Darvin, start with you.
Doritos. I'm a Dorito-holic. I've been out knocking out two bags a day, Jay. I gotta stop, man. Doritos are killing me, man.
Josh, how about you?
For me, it's Honey Nut Cheerios. I tried to look at, you know, something. I'm watching, you know, The Last Dance on ESPN, and it's kind of giving me some nostalgia as a kid growing up. So I'm like, what can I eat that's going to remind me of my childhood? And kind of, so Honey Nut Cheerios it is every night. And it's, to me, it's like a healthy snack before I go to bed. So hopefully I can kind of keep it going, but it's, that's been my one thing.
George, anything for you?
Oh, I discovered drumsticks, ice cream. And I've never had one of those. And my wife introduced me to drumstick. And now there's nuts all over the bed, man. It's everywhere. I think I got the measles. It's everywhere. And Jay, I lost 11 pounds, man. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what drumsticks you're eating. The ones who have gained my weight. I've gained the COVID-19. Well, guys, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a great pleasure to have you, and thanks for dropping all the knowledge. It's been great.
Thank you, Jay.
Good seeing you, Jeff. Tonight.
We'd like to welcome in just a legend of the game, Tara Vandeveer, who's the head coach at Stanford, has been since 1985, and she's been to 12 Final Fours, two NCAA titles under her belt, and she's in the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, the Women's Hall of Fame, you name it. Just an extraordinary career and one of the truly great teachers and ambassadors of the game. And Tara, wanted to start with you just on your career. that you played, you started Albany and then you spent 3 years playing at Indiana. And while you're playing there, you used to attend Bob Knight's practices. What did you learn from Bob Knight as far as teaching and coaching?
Well, Jay, it's a pleasure to be part of the junior NBA program. And, you know, I did go to Indiana for 3 years and I did watch Coach Knight's practices. And I think the thing that I learned, just they're very organized practices. You know, that was the main thing. They're very organized. They had a lot of pace to them. You know, they went quickly from one drill to the next. They were very fundamental. And I really enjoyed watching his practices and taking his basketball coaching class also. But it was, you know, watching the practices was really fun. I was there when they had the national championship players, Quinn Buckner, the best players I think that ever played at Indiana.
And from how did you develop your coaching philosophy in how you taught offensive concepts and how you selected the offense that you were going to run?
Well, I think that, you know, as a young child, I grew up and the only, you know, basketball wasn't on television a lot, but the NBA team that I watched was the Boston Celtics with Cousy and all those, the great players that they had, and they played fast. It was a lot of fast breaks. So that's how I like basketball. I like to play up-tempo basketball, you know, as much as possible. And then, you know, kind of as a player and watching, you know, I guess I like free-flowing basketball, like, you know, with maybe, you know, in we all had a 30-second clock. Men did not have a 30-second clock when I was watching Indiana basketball. And so they would run, you know, they'd run their offense and run their offense and, you know, pass and cut and screen. And, but the scores were really low. I like high scoring games. I like a lot of offense. And so I think that I watched that and I was really fortunate. I was at Ohio State where they had also Fred Taylor, a great, great coach, Bobby Knight's coach. And teaching spacing, fundamentals, I think that that was really kind of where I was coming from. And then as a young coach, I had a chance to actually take our team to China. And we played a team from China where they had just introduced the three-point line. And, you know, in the college game, it came in, I believe, in 1988. And China already had it. And internationally, they already had it. And we, like, I just loved having the three-point line to space the floor and, you know, open the offense up a lot. And I think that that's where – you know, that's where I'm at in terms of our offensive philosophy, pace, spacing, keeping everyone involved. I'm not a big stand around one-on-one basketball coach at all.
And when you, I think if people look back at your career, they probably say you've been most associated with the triangle offense. You've run some other things throughout your career, but most often you've been associated with the triangle offense. Why did you choose the triangle and what did it bring to your program?
Well, we brought the triangle in to Stanford, I want to think, about 20 years ago, or maybe even 25 years ago. And the reason that we did it was we played against it and we couldn't stop it. And then we also, we had some post players. And what I like about an offense like the triangle, although we have moved on from the triangle now with our team to more of a Princeton offense to kind of make that post be higher. What I like was the idea that you had different options with the ball, kind of read and react what the defense was doing, but you also were giving your team a little bit of an advantage, but it's not a set play. Like to me, a set play could get stick scouted. And by the time you're playing in the tournament, you're going to get scouted. And then what would people do? So I wanted our team to be able to read defense, but I wanted the offense to have a little bit of a clue about what to look for. If that follows, just so it's not just, pure motion offense to me was a little bit, sometimes could be commotion offense. So I wanted a little structure, but not totally structured.
And it emphasized passing. I know you've always been a big proponent of your players being very skilled passers. In order to be a skilled passer, what sort of drills do you use to emphasize passing and to improve your players' passing skills?
You know, it's interesting. I think sometimes people think that past is a four-letter word, you know, in basketball. But we start out, you know, the beginning of practice is basically every day is doing ball handling and passing drills. And we work on basic passes, the two-handed chest pass, you know, your thumbs going down and out. We work on a one-hand push pass, right hand, left hand. And that's very hard for players that are, you know, if they're right-handed, to make a one-handed push pass to make an entry pass. We work on an overhead pass. You know, we're going forehead to forehead where there's not spin on the ball. We'll do drills. Gannon Baker is one of my favorite people that I know you've probably had on with a junior NBA or you will. But, you know, doing all kinds of Baker drills, we call them, behind the back pass. Really having control of the ball. I think passing is really, really a fun skill, but it's an underdeveloped skill, and we work on it every single day.
All right, Tara, are you more of a believer in recruiting players that can play in any system or recruiting players to your system?
You know, Jay, working at Stanford, I'm basically told by admissions who I can recruit. So, you know, one time I went looking at a player and I asked my assistant coach, what's her name? And she said, 2 point. And so she's like, you don't need to know her name because she has a 2 point grade point and you can never recruit her. So a lot of times I'm figuring out what, I would say I probably have to get the players and then I have to design the offense around our players. And one of the reasons that we changed from the triangle offense to more of a Princeton offense was I felt like the officiating was allowing so much physical contact. Our post player would just get beat up, you know, and just to rely on a low block scoring or presence, I just said, we need to open things up more and move that post. We'll go to the low block sometimes, but not have that be our meat and potatoes. So I would say in answer to your question, we build our offense around our players more than the other way around.
When you made that change, I think it was around 2014, if I remember right, when you made that change, I remember you talking to Mike D'Antoni. Didn't you bring Mike D'Antoni in to talk to him about some changes you could make and how to be more guard-oriented or perimeter-oriented?
Yes, Mike was extremely helpful. And how lucky is that? You know, I would just try to reach out to coaches and say, and like Mike would come in and he'd have on the whiteboard, it'd be like scribbles, all these scribbles all over the place, you know, and I'm trying to think of like at the end of the day, I'm thinking, what the heck was that? You know, but I took little pictures along the route. You know, we went away from having a low block presence. And so we kind of instituted more of what we called up down, where you screen on the ball and then the other side you screen up, you know, it's a continuous pick and roll action. And we kind of, that then became more of our Princeton, where we said, well, yeah, that wasn't quite enough. We liked the pick and roll action, but it wasn't quite enough variety in the offense for me. Jay, I'm a copier. I really watch what other people do and, you know, I watch other teams and I try to think of, well, what do they do that I can use for me and for our team? And so I was kind of just copying what he was doing, but then meant when it didn't fit or I tweak it a little bit, then he was very helpful.
Who are some of the other coaches? You call yourself a copier. I think that's true of everybody really, but who are some of the coaches you feel you've borrowed from that have been really helpful in observing?
Well, I am so blessed in my life, Jay, to have been around the greatest coaches ever. If you ask me, whether it's Coach Knight, you know, watching his practices, being at Ohio State, Fred Taylor. And then when I first came to Stanford, gentlemen, you know, Pete Newell would do his big man's camp at Stanford. And I was one of those coaches that would hang around and hang around. And when everyone else was done, he would look at me and say, come on, Tara, let's go get some Chinese food. And then I'd get 3 more hours of notes with Pete Newell and I'd have like notebooks of stuff. So, you know, and I think just, you know, maybe not as much now, but anytime, I always try to watch our men's practice. Coach Dawkins, Johnny Dawkins was at Stanford and talked to him a lot. I try to learn from other coaches, not just basketball, but I talked to our swim coach about how do you take like tenths of seconds off your time, whether it's nutrition or, you know, different things. I try to watch what football practices and different, whatever I can to get an idea of how can we get better? You know, how can I help our team get better?
Well, you made so many really interesting points, but the one about set plays, and I know so many coaches, especially of younger players, can struggle at times with wanting to control what's going on in the floor rather than their players making reads and trusting their players to make the right read. How do you teach a player to make the right read? Is there a way that you can approach that and accomplish it?
You know, I think basketball in some ways has gotten so many young players, boys and girls, but maybe even more so with girls, I think they don't play basketball. They go to practice. They have an individual coach. They work on skill. And that's all good. But sometimes you learn about basketball by playing basketball. You know, like as, you know, way back, I mean, I didn't play on teams that much. I went out and played with the boys. And you learn to use a head fake because otherwise you'd be getting your shot blocked all day long. You know, you learn to use fakes or you learn to cut and you learn how to screen because that's what allowed you to stay on because you won the game. You know, and winners stayed and losers got off the court. But I think that there's I like to give our team some direction with the offense, but not try to program everything. You know, I don't want them what I call being on train tracks. I want them to, number one, I think we want to drill fundamentals. And the way they get to learn to read defense is by practicing little two-on-two situations or three-on-three situations of, you know, this person's overplaying you, go back door. Or, you know, you're setting a screen and they're switching, roll. So it's drilling situations over and over, but making them small, like two-on-two, three-on-three, maybe some four-on-four, before you just roll the ball out and say five-on-five.
So you're more of a believer in the part-whole teaching method?
Yes. I would say this, if I'm teaching today, I mean, tomorrow would be my first day without COVID of being in the gym with our freshmen. And what I would do is I like to have everything like on video to show them so they have a videotape to learn from. They also have a written, here's the offense, what we're going to do. And then I will show them the big picture of this is what we want to do. We want to come down in transition. We want to run wide. We want our post going here. This is how we get into our offense. Someone's coming up into the pinch. Here's the spacing, the spots that you're in. And anyone could play any spot, ideally. You know, anyone can, if you have the skill to do it, then you do it. Not like you're a one, you're a two, you're a three, you go here. So I call it the green light in the beginning. Then it might become the yellow light, and then it might become the red light, you know, depending upon what your skill set is. But so I'll explain the whole thing, and then we'll break it down into do this piece and work on this piece and then that piece and then put it back together.
In this age where positionless basketball has become almost cliche, you know, when I was a player a million years ago, coaches at every level would at one point in practice say, all right, guards down here, bigs down here. And you'd have different work going on. Is that the same for you now? Do you have all of your players doing the same things?
That's a great question. We still will divide up a little bit, but I would say that, and this goes back to someone like John Wooden, like everyone does ball handling drills. Everyone does passing drills. Everyone does, weave and all kinds of, you know, moving and cutting drills. There are some things where in our offense, it really is positionless based on what you can do. Now, like Jay, if you were on the team I was coaching, what position in college did you play more? Would you say you were a power forward or small forward? What were you like in back in the day?
Yeah, I played the four and the five, primarily the five.
Okay. So for us, our five, can you shoot threes?
I could. We didn't have a 3-point shot when I played. I did when I played pro ball overseas. I shot them.
Yeah, so
that I had a lot of red lights. Coach K gave me a lot of red lights.
Really? Okay. Well, we would start with a green light, Jay, and I would hope that, you know, like you could shoot the three, and if you could, that would be great. I would encourage you to do it. And what we would do is, if you had like a big slow guy on you, we would love to bring you away from the basket, you know, and shoot. That's like in my mind, like last year our team beat Baylor. They have a big post player that was 6'7", and our center would come out and shoot threes. So she was uncomfortable guarding, you know, someone out there. Now, at the same time, we might have a big guard for us. We have Haley Jones, who's very versatile, can play point guard. We'll put her inside. So we'll try to take advantage of mismatches in our offense. But spacing, the more skill you have, the more I can be creative. So I would take advantage of your skill set.
Tara, in a late game situation, how do you view a late game where the use of a timeout late versus allowing your team to get the ball up court against a defense that is not yet set?
Well, Jay, you know that in the women's game, we have the advance the ball rule in the last minute of the game, and you can, and I save my timeouts. Like, I don't take timeouts early in the game. Sometimes we'll be down, I don't know, 10, 12, and I'm like, you know, hey, figure it out. Let's get better. And by the end of the game, I want to have the timeout. Sometimes that could backfire. And, you know, my assistants will say, well, you know, a lot of good those timeouts are doing you now. But, you know, I like to save the timeouts. And we practice a lot more time and score situations. And we have certain plays that we will run. And, you know, the officials will allow you to bring the advance the ball, you know, to one side of the court or the other. If we need a two or a three, we run certain plays. But for the most part, you know, I want my players to know if you need a timeout, we have it, you know, or, you know, so we'll practice these situations. And like last year alone, I mean, we won a game with 1.6 seconds, you know, with a play on the sideline. The sideline plays are really changed things a lot, I think, you know, as opposed to not advancing. But advancing, then we practice those plays over and over and over, and they know them. We took the timeout, and as the team is coming to the sideline, one of the players said, well, we're going to run, you know, whatever play it was, you know, Duke or whatever it was.
And Tara, what do you do with break options? Are those calls that you'll have, or is it based on where the point guard takes the ball on the break?
You mean in terms of like just fast break?
Yeah, your second, like, you know, fast break into maybe secondary break before you get into your offense. Yeah. Do you have like, I remember back when you ran triangle, you might call it swing through or easy. I don't know all your play calls, yeah, but stuff like that where you'd have break options.
Right. We do have a couple of those where, like, we'll come down and transition. If we don't have, like, a flat-out layup or, you know, if you're not able to, like, the first thing I want to do, I want our bigs to run, you know, and I want to reward them with the ball. So if our bigs run in, stay wide, you know, have vision on the ball, we're going to you, run to the basket. But if we don't have that, then we could run a variation of maybe two or three different, quote, transition plays, so to speak, a high and in play or a back pick play, something like we'll have a couple of those that we'll do. If anything, I think I really work hard at this, but I'm not as good as I need to be. I probably overload our team a little bit. And but then by the end of the year, they're really cooking with all kinds of different options. In the beginning, like some of the freshmen, their head's spinning. But we had a player this year, it was amazing. She played every position on the court, Haley Jones, as a freshman and learned everything. Like, so if she can learn everything, some of them can learn one or two things.
Well, before we finish up, I'd like to ask a question that's sort of non-basketball related. So I know you're busy working throughout this entire quarantine or whatever we call it, phase one now. But what kind of things are you doing outside of basketball to keep yourself occupied and sane as we go through this?
You know, well, I think the first thing is I really feel like it's really important that I stay healthy. And, you know, so I'm sheltering in place. I have a cabin in Minnesota. Maybe you can see it. And I'm away from, you know, just away from people, but, you know, I'll Zoom and call and everything. I try to work out every day on the Peloton, like you do, or I go water skiing. So that's been keeping me really sane. And you know, one of the things I've connected a lot more, even with my own family, we do a family Zoom, and I've played bridge every day with my mom for 1 hour. She's 93. And I have to say that it's very humbling to get beat every day by your mother. But it's, she does it every day. But it's, you know, it's a very hard time for everybody. And, you know, we just want to get through it and get back on the court. And it's, you know, just trying to stay healthy as much as I can. So.
Well, you look great, and can't thank you enough for being with us today on Junior NBA Coach's Corner. And good luck against your mom. Hopefully you'll pick your record up a little bit.
It's just like recruiting, Jay. You need good cards, you know. So, but thank you very much. Stay well. It's my pleasure.
You too. Thanks, Tara. For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches video library, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Next week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, Jay welcomes from the Chicago Bulls coaching staff, Karen Stack Umlauf, head coach, North Carolina Central University, Lavelle Moten, and USA Basketball's Don Showalter. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.